You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast here on WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is a first-time guest who I've become aware of recently and who does some outstanding political reporting. And based on his background, I think it's worth everybody maybe giving him a shot as another source for some accurate and factual reporting and analysis in Illinois. His name's Patrick Fingston. He's operates the Daily Illinois. He has a background in communications. And won an award, actually, for his coverage of the Rod Blagojevich impeachment trial. Then he turned his attention to politics and worked in Republican politics for a number of years, and then started the Daily Illinois a couple years ago. For you that want to look at it, it's the Illinois, that's theillinoise.com. I think it'd be worth your time. Patrick, thanks for taking the time to be on.
Robin, thanks for having me.
Well, we live in strange times, to say the least.
I'll say.
You've been doing some great coverage of the Illinois governor's race. And let's just start with an overview of where it's at. It's been a unique race in a lot of ways, but how do things stand right now, and what are some key recent developments that are impacting the race?
Well, I think conventional wisdom is that J.B. Pritzker is well on his way to sailing to reelection. The money says so. The infrastructure says so. The way that he has put his campaign together would appear so. Darren Bailey is the most conservative nominee for governor in at least 100 years, dwarfing the, Bill Brady's and Jim Ryan's and, Jim Thompson and Jim Edgar aren't even in the same stratosphere in terms of conservatism. He had a chance, I felt, in the immediate days leading up to the primary, when it was very clear he was going to win, and the days immediately following the primary where he did win, that Senator Bailey could start to make some treks to the middle. That's where you win in this state. You don't win without moderate suburban moms, and you don't win without 20% in the city of Chicago. Neither of those things look possible with primary candidate, Southern Illinois Baptist preacher sounding far right candidate Darren Bailey. So is the race over today as we talk in mid-July, late July? No, we're still looking at significantly challenging times for Governor Pritzker, in the sense that his numbers are still almost underwater. He's about 50-46 last I saw, 50% approved, 46% disapprove. And that's, don't quote me on that, that's testing my memory, and having just come off COVID, brain fog is real. So he's not inherently popular statewide. It is unknown what crime issues, COVID issues, education issues, et cetera, will do with those moderate women, especially in the suburbs. And are they attracted to or repulsed by politically the way that J.B. Pritzker is doing things? And then add the economic factors. I live in the suburbs. It was a couple of weeks ago that gasoline was $6 a gallon for regular unleaded. It's coming down now, but to the tune of $5.15 a gallon isn't necessarily a savior for people who have to commute to work. And especially downstate, if you look at people who have to drive 15, 20 miles, 30 miles one way to a job. it often leaves them choosing between food and fuel. And that is a scary economic situation to be in. So add the crime, you know, add the leftward movement of the Democratic Party that has really pushed away a lot of the blue collar traditional Democrats, in the same way that Trumpism has kind of pushed away a lot of center right Republicans, business minded Republicans. You're starting to see that track for Democrats, and so that's a very long winded way of saying Bailey is in trouble, but it's not a slam dunk in late July.
My thought was, Patrick, say 3 months ago, 4 months ago, it looked like the key issues were going to be crime and inflation. And as listeners may be aware, I know you're aware, the fundamentals are that if there's a Democrat in the White House, the Republicans tend to do better in off-year elections like this one, and vice versa when a Republican's in the White House. It comes down to voter motivation to get out the vote. Biden seems a drag. I mean, inflation is still bad. Just go to the gas pump, go to the grocery store. Crime is certainly an issue, not just in Chicago, but around the state. But then you had the Supreme Court rulings on guns, followed up by the shooting in the suburbs, and then overturning Roe v. Wade. Did those court rulings save Pritzker from perhaps a close race, do you think?
Not necessarily. And this would, you know, my opinion is that Pritzker is playing to the far left of his party on abortion. There was a poll done by Ogden and Fry, which is kind of a Republican-leaning polling firm, in June that said something like 20%, around 20% of voters in the state, people in the state, are 100% pro-choice, pro-abortion rights, zero restrictions, zero challenges. On the same side, it was like 15% of people are completely pro-life with no exceptions for any sort of abortion. Those are the extremes, those, you know, 35% of people. So for the other 65% of us that look at abortion, it is either a yes, I am pro-choice because, or yes, I am pro-life because. And you have your different ways of thinking about it. The governor's playing to those 20 or 22%. He's not playing to the middle on this, but the vast majority of people in this state, and I'm not talking about people who read the New York Times or go on Twitter or watch MSNBC, you know, it's the vast majority of real people don't put abortion at the top of their priority list. The majority of people are trying to get by. And, you know, I'm a downstater by trade. I grew up in a, you know, very poor rural county in along the Indiana line. And it's while yes, people are pro-life, they're very clearly Christian conservatives. They're not going to the ballot box because they believe that abortion, which is already legal in almost any circumstance in Illinois, and that's not going to change. They're not being driven to the polls by that, which leads you to the thought that there's more to what J.B. Pritzker's saying than running for re-election. As you may very well know,
do you think we've seen news that Pritzker was off in New Hampshire, and New Hampshire is the first primary state, not by coincidence, and now he was down in Florida, I believe, where he contracted COVID,
which is just hilariously ironic. I mean, obviously, I want the governor to feel better and not have any serious issue. And, you know, like I said, I had it, I came off of it a couple of weeks ago. It's not fun, but thanks to vaccines and antivirals, et cetera, he's not in a life-threatening situation. So we can at least note the irony of Florida.
He's. It seems to me like an end zone dance, a little with too much time left on the clock, and kind of an in-your-face move. But do you take these moves seriously? That he is looking ahead already to a presidential run if Biden chooses not to, or
I think a guy like J.B. Pritzker can do two things at once. Three things at once. I mean, he is still governor too. He can be governor, run for re-election, and dip his toes in the water nationally too. Remember, Joe Biden has continued to say that he's running in 2024. Some frank talk here. His numbers are bad among Republicans and Democrats and independents. 92% of Democrats said they would vote for him, for Biden, but that's not necessarily saying they want him to be the nominee. He would be a few weeks short of his 82nd birthday in November of 2024. And I think we have to be realistic about the, look and sound of him, that he looks and sounds older and frail, a little frail and a little slow. And I'm not one of those crazy conservative conspiracy theorists who's like, oh, he's got diminished mental capacities and he's unfit. I don't believe that. I think he's a 77, 78 year old man, and things slow down at that level. So Joe Biden says he's running. Does that make Kamala Harris the person in waiting? I don't think so. So then that's going to leave openings for a progressive, well-funded, high name ID, that Penny Pritzker was a high-ranking member of the Obama administration, tie the Hyatt hotels into it, which everybody well knows. There's a path for him there. Is he spiking the ball before he gets to the end zone? I don't know. I think we'll know the answer to that in September and October, which I don't think we can say in July. But it will be interesting to see how they treat Bailey moving forward. If they put their boot on his neck, essentially, and cut him off at the pass, and knock him out by Labor Day, similar to what Rob Blagojevich did to Judy Bartzepinka in 2006, or if they're going to underestimate and allow him to stick around, and then you have a September or October surprise or economic downturn or COVID blow up and the schools get shut down again, and the governor's not in a place he wants to be.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And today my guest is Patrick Fingston, who is the creator of The Daily Illinois. It's a news site on the internet that provides some pretty good coverage from somebody who's been engaged in the political battles as a communications person and as a political strategist. Patrick and I have been talking a little bit about the governor's race. That's kind of been our focus up till now and where it stands. I'm curious to get your take. I saw a report and I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, as being somebody involved in politics in my past as you have been, on Richard Irvin, who comes off as just kind of a tragic figure, where the amount of money spent on him, he was chosen by the moderate wing of the Republican Party because he was a mayor, because he was more middle of the road, perhaps more electable, African-American, perhaps a threat to Pritzker. Decent choice. But that had to have been one of the worst campaigns and messages I've ever seen. And the money that was spent, share a little bit on what you found on where the money went. And to me, this, again, highlights one of the problems with our political system.
Well, it's interesting that because the election was pushed back to June 28th, June 30th is a traditional reporting deadline for campaign finance reports. So those have all come out in the last few weeks. And just in the second quarter from April 1st to June 30th, obviously the heart of the gubernatorial primary campaign, you know, Irvin's campaign spent upwards of $40 million. And they got third place for it. They essentially shut things down over the last few weeks because they were out of contention and Ken Griffin wasn't coming through with any more money. But if you look through those reports, you see that it wasn't a campaign focused on grassroots or, I mean, obviously they spent a heap of money on TV, but it was a consultant driven campaign. And I reported a few months back that Ken Griffin's chief government affairs guy, whose name is Kasen Carter, and a longtime Republican insider in the state named Mike Zolnarovich, who goes by Mike Z, who I worked with on Rodney Davis's first race in 2012. They were the guys that went out and tried to recruit a candidate. I don't know who their first choice was. I don't know how they landed on Irvin, but he definitely ticked that minority box for them. They wanted a Latino. They wanted an African-American. They wanted somebody who wasn't just another old white dude. And I appreciate that as a late 30s white dude who's well on my way to being an old white dude. The problem was that they focused their entire primary strategy on crime and tearing down Darren Bailey and Jesse Sullivan, who won and got second, interestingly enough, with a campaign that was full of, frankly, slander and lies. And people saw through that, especially downstaters who have seen Darren Bailey at every time, you know, he opens his mouth over the last couple of years downstate. People are seeing him. And so there was clear pushback. And I think you saw when polling came out as people were talking about what was the number one issue for them. Especially when you're talking about Republican primary voters, where 48% of them live outside of Cook County and the suburban collar counties, crime isn't the issue there. You know, they're cognizant of it, they care about it, but that doesn't drive them maybe to the way that city voters or suburban voters do. So they hung their hat thinking they could motivate suburbanites on crime. But if you live in Naperville or Orland Park, or I almost said Highland Park, that obviously that changed the narrative on that issue a couple of weeks ago, but take a nice Winnetka, you know, in Lake County, you're not thinking about, and maybe you should be, but you're not thinking about crime in Englewood or a group of idiot kids that get out of hand in River North on a Friday night because you're holed up very nicely in your bedroom community. So clearly they misjudged what Republican voters wanted. And you can argue that maybe Irvin just isn't a Republican. You know, he voted in five of the past six Democratic or primaries before this one. So I assume it's probably now five out of the last seven, assuming he voted for himself. And everyone who I met or everyone I talked to before Irvin got into the race, I've never met him. I had maybe one word with him at an event before I was stymied by his, you know, press goons. And, you know, so I don't know him, but everyone I talked to that knew him or knows him says he's a bright, thoughtful, compassionate, decent guy who really connects with people. Did you see that during the primary? No. Not one bit. So, yeah, he got fleeced by a bunch of consultants. His message was terrible, and he was boxed in, and it was just a recipe for disaster.
It seems like his ads, he came off as angry. And I'm still, I guess, old school, the Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, where I think optimism sells. Maybe it doesn't as much anymore.
Well, today's Republican Party is angry, though.
Yeah. What would you put your consultant hat on if you were running that race? And of course, between that and buying five or six other homes, cashing in. But how would you have done this differently?
I would have let Irvin be Irvin, you know, prepare him on the issues at hand. You know, if I would rather him go down saying I didn't support Donald Trump because I found him to be too divisive, or I voted for Donald Trump in the general, but not in the primary. You can, if you go down with that, then so be it, because you can't change that environment. But I think people, primary voters notwithstanding, because primary voters are rabid, bloodthirsty, ready to kill the other guys, which may not be a great analogy with the, again, the Highland Park thing out there. But I mean that in a metaphorical term, obviously, that everybody is so rabid that I felt like there was a window for someone to come in and say, I'm going to be the grown-up in the room. You know, I love a guy like Kirk Dillard, who may not have ever, you know, won a Republican primary statewide, even if he did try to run again. He would have been able to say, I sat next to Jim Thompson. I sat next to Jim Edgar. I know how to get things done. And whether it's Republicans or Democrats, we want somebody that can build some consensus, don't we? It is so far right and so far left in Springfield now, and it's only moving farther left after the primary, that there's no opportunity for consensus. So you're going to have this ongoing hamster wheel of Democrats move farther and farther and farther to the left and pass these way out there progressive policies, and Republicans are just going to get angrier and angrier and angrier and elect more people to the farther right and farther right, and we're not going to get anywhere. So it sets a really bad tone, and I would have rather said to Irvin or Dillard or whoever it might have been in that line that I want you to just say, I'm going to be the guy that can fix it. And if that works, then we're going to go win. If it doesn't work, then we're going to go down on our morals.
I got about 4 minutes left here, but I wanted to give you a heads up and time to answer this question, because we spoke a little bit about it before we went on the air. But I think your career trajectory has been very interesting, from communications to politics. And now you've chosen to go in and do some reporting and analysis, which, with all the trends going on, the elevation of social media, which has just been a really almost a cancer on our society, in my view, as far as news operations go. The loss of local journalism. What really compelled you to take this route, to start going into the hard reporting and analysis that you do?
Well, I was a reporter for a long time. When I first started my career, I was 21 years old, essentially still in college, when I was hired at WDWS in Champaign, which is kind of a heritage legendary radio station that's been around since the 30s. And I got to work alongside some incredibly respected journalists who taught me how to be a good reporter. It was, you know, I've never been the handsomest to be on TV, and I've never had the best voice to be on radio. And, but I worked hard to find truth, and honestly didn't care if that made people upset. And you know, it weighed on you after a while. You know, you get around to 2009, 2010, where, you know, the economy is tanked, and, you know, I'm a 26-year-old guy with, you know, getting furlough days and no money, and it weighs on you, and you think to yourself, you can maybe go make a difference elsewhere. So I was able to jump into the political world after that with a friend who was appointed to the state house, who then ran for state senate, and we were able to get him elected in a primary in 2012. I went to work on Rodney Davis's first race in 2012, where we won a very close race, and you know, just over the years have worked other jobs, consulted, you know, worked races. But 2016 and 2020 were really a problem for me as a center right conservative who wanted a party that I could be proud of. Obviously I opposed Trump from the start and you know, made a point of that. I even endorsed, we were living in Indiana for a few years, 2014 to 2018. And in 2018, I endorsed a Democrat for U.S. Senate, which made people angry. But he was a guy that worked with me and on the issues that I worked on and cared about, and was a good person for the job. And in 2020, I worked a congressional race here in Illinois that led to Mary Miller winning a primary and eventually winning that seat. And I felt like I shouted from the rooftops that this was someone who was deeply unqualified to serve an elective office, especially following someone like John Shimkus, who is such a respectable guy. Whether you agree with him or not, he's a good guy. And we lost. We got trounced because she took the Trump view of things. And I came back home after that primary and said to myself, I can't let these bad people continue to win, or these unqualified people continue to win. Reporters aren't doing their jobs, especially small market newspaper reporters who just kind of shrug when you tell them there's an election happening, and because they've got 1,000 different things and, you know, are getting paid nothing to do 4 pages once a week. And voters have just been gaslit by silly, stupid people. So how do I, little old me, make a difference? And I don't know that I do, but I'm trying. And that's why I started this newsletter, you know, called The Illinois. And just essentially, I'm just trying to tell the truth. I don't care who's a Republican, who's a Democrat. I have opinions, but I don't have an agenda. I just want things to be better. And that kind of led me down that path.
Well, I'm glad you did. And I know a lot of others do. I've got some friends that referenced you to me, and I've been following it. And I'm glad you do. And with your background, you provide some keen insights. And I'm one that does believe truth does still matter. And for those of you that do out there, follow Patrick at The Illinois. That's with a Z, at theillinois.com. And
you can sign up for the newsletter in the top right corner of the screen, and that you'll get something every day.
There you go. Well, Patrick, thank you again for being on Heartland Politics, and I look forward to having you back at some point.
Anytime, Robin. Thanks so much.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.